Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Today, the IGIS Sounds of Safety podcast presents another episode in the Navigating Cybersecurity series. Let's welcome back experts Larry Zorio and Jeremy Cooper-Levitt as they explore the fourth core function of the NIST cybersecurity framework, Detect. The Detect action supports an organization's ability to find and analyze cybersecurity attacks and compromises in a timely manner to mitigate harm and support successful incident response. Now let's pass it back to our hosts and start the episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS's Sounds of Safety Cybersecurity Corner. This is your host, Larry. And I'm here with Jeremy once again. And today we're going to be focusing again on the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, specifically the Detect domain. The Detect domain is one of the smaller domains within the NIST framework. So this might be a bit of a shorter episode compared to some of our other ones. But as you're listening, please stay tuned to the end, because at the end, Jeremy and I are going to give you some really tactical, let's call it tips, and maybe even some tools to use to satisfy this Detect category. So, Jeremy, how you doing? Welcome to the show again. Good talking with you.
Yeah, glad to be here. Doing great.
Awesome. All right. So just as a review for everyone, I'm just going to quickly go over it again as a refresher. So we have the NIST cybersecurity framework, Jeremy, and it's really made up of six domains, and that's different than the old one. The old one was five. This one is six. We've done an episode on govern. We've done an episode on identify. We've done an episode on protect. So listeners, if you haven't heard those, please go back and listen to those three episodes. They're great. So now we have three left. We have detect, which we're going to cover today. We have respond. And then finally, we have recover. And as another reminder, this is just a good framework for really any agency or business to follow to mature their cybersecurity practices and try to get ahead of some of the risks that are out there. All right. So with regards to detect, let's get right into it. And everyone, again, stay tuned to the very end, because at the end, we're going to give you some very tactical actions and tools you can use. So let's get into the first part of, and this is why I love NIST, because NIST has detect, but then they also kind of break it down into subcategories. The first subcategory I would like to review with you is under detect, the first one is continuous monitoring. And I will give everybody the explanation that NIST has for continuous monitoring. It is assets are monitored to find anomalies, indicators of compromise, and other potentially adverse events. Jeremy, what is kind of your overall thoughts to this one? How important is it? Just like your gut reaction before we get into like the real details on this around this particular one, continuous monitoring.
Yeah, I like how it starts out with assets. We've, in some of our previous discussions, we've talked about how important it is to know and prioritize your most important assets. It kind of follows that same theme. We've got to know what our most important assets are. We've got to track them. We've got to put the appropriate controls in place. And once we get that, we're protecting our most important assets. Now we need to know what to look for. We've got to find these behaviors we call anomalies that are outside of the realm of how a system should normally behave, that also can tell us what an indicator of compromise is. And an indicator of compromise is really just like a clue that something is happening that shouldn't be happening to the asset. But I like how in this statement, it goes back again to talking about assets. And again, I always say this, it's hard to monitor and look at and protect everything at the same time. It's best to start with your most important assets. And that's the same with continuous monitoring. Monitor, that's what is most important to you. And that's kind of where, when I look at that statement, I like to start with the assets and the most important one.
Can you explain to the audience what are some examples of assets?
Yeah, like I start with what is the most important thing to a company that they're trying to protect? And it's data. It's the information that they're holding and that they're caretakers of. They're usually caretakers of information for somebody else. Someone else has trusted a company or an organization with data that they need to take care of. It could be anything ranging from credit card information. It could be a driver's license. It could be a person's address, their email address, whatever it is required to conduct business, to perform the transaction. It's that type of data that needs to be protected. And where are you putting it? I mean, most of us are now, nowadays, we don't use like an Excel spreadsheet anymore. We're putting them in databases. Mm. We're putting some type of protection around those databases. So that information that we're trying to protect, the asset I look at as the most important is the information. And then where is it sitting? It's sitting on a server. It's sitting on hardware. It's sitting in software. Maybe it's in the cloud, but it's sitting somewhere. But it's always a very data-centric view of what, you know, where and what is most important to us.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it actually fits very nicely with kind of what we want to get into now, is going into the details a little bit, right? So one of the categories is continuous monitoring, which we're talking about, and Jeremy's highlighting the assets, and we need to protect the assets, and whether it's data or hardware or what have you. But this is great around NIST, everybody. This is why we should all be using it. The subcategories even below that, Jeremy, talk around networks, and network services are monitored. Physical environments are monitored. Personnel activity is monitored. So yeah, there's a lot. I think you might even have this up on your screen as well, so it's as we could use it as a reference point. But let's talk around, I mean, a lot of us, I think pretty much all of us have some sort of network, whether it's an on-prem network or it's in the cloud. When you think about monitoring networks, like how would they monitor a network, Jeremy? Like what are some, I can think of one obvious one on how to monitor networks, but what are your thoughts on how to do that?
They've been around since the beginning, but firewalls are one of our first lines of defense to protect us from the edge. So almost every company, we call it the edge. So a lot of times we're calling it the internet. We are protecting ourselves from the internet. And there, you know, depending on the kind of company you are and what you have up and running, you need to identify what are your most important networks. So if you have a transaction-based network, are you focusing your monitoring efforts into that environment, looking for those indicators of compromise and looking for the things that you need to see? Do you have the visibility that you require on those networks? You might need to have a switch or some kind of device that you can put on there that you can connect your tools that you're using to look. Firewalls give off logs and they tell a story. And those logs,
a lot of logs, Jeremy.
A lot of logs.
Yes.
And that's a big story, and they're very verbose. Mm-hmm. And you got to look through them. So you need some kind of system to help you look at your logs and understand and know, like, these kind of network logs are good behaving logs or they're logs behaving badly. Mm-hmm. And you need to know what those are. And a lot of times you can. What if, you know, there's some good examples, like, what if I see someone trying to connect to my site 50 times in a row and they're getting the wrong password each time, but they're trying a different password all the time? It doesn't look like normal behavior. Mm-mm. There's a clue, but the networks that we look at give us clues. And when, you know, can start with is a firewall and those logs and look at them.
I mean, hopefully all of our listeners do have some form of firewall, whether it's an actual piece of hardware, or there are more kind of, some of the newer ones are more cloud firewalls. Everything kind of runs in the cloud as well. And, you know, what Jeremy's talking about with all of these logs is, to the point you made at the beginning, is you're looking for anomalies. One very kind of easy one to understand is if you're like a local police department or fire or EMS or even a jail system, should you be doing business with somebody from China? Should you be seeing any IP addresses from China hitting your network? There's probably a good chance unless you're a massive, massive agency, like maybe there is an opportunity that you're doing some sort of international work, but a local police department, a city within the United States probably is not dealing with that. So if your firewalls are seeing IP addresses, traffic coming from certain countries, or really, I mean, I use China as the example, Jeremy, but really any country, right? Any country outside of the United States should probably not be hitting your network. So those are examples of anomalies. Like, you shouldn't be seeing that on a regular basis. And if you do see it, and hopefully your firewalls are advanced enough to be able to report those anomalies to you, those are some examples of some things that you should be looking at. Like, well, this is strange. I'm seeing an IP address from Spain. Like, why would Spain be trying to connect to our agency? So look into that. Moving on, we have physical environment. So monitor for your physical environment. I don't want to touch on all of these, but let's go to personnel activity and technology usage. I think this is a good one. Why would I care about the activity that my personnel is doing, Jeremy? Like, all right, big deal. I mean, I know that the threat actors are trying to get into my network, but why my personnel?
Yeah, we've heard in cybersecurity and in our field that a lot of times some acts of data being taken from a company could be done from an employee that is either disgruntled or they make a mistake. But it goes back to the prioritization we discussed. It goes back to access to data. Not everybody needs access to the data to do their job. People should only have access to the data that they require. It's a concept that's used in the military. It's, you know, for your eyes only. Let's compartmentalize the data and protect it to only those who require it. And that's what I look at it. The activity, if I'm starting to see somebody, a developer, trying to access payroll files coming from an IP address or and their user ID, and I see that kind of information, I should know, no, that person in that part of our network shouldn't be coming here. I need to block that. And a lot of times companies will put firewalls on the inside of their company that will block people on the inside from going to those networks to make them even more secure. So it's kind of like an important building, like in a fort. We're going to have additional fortifications around the head office. And we're going to have other checkpoints before someone can get into the room with all the important files or the other room that has the payroll for everybody in the fort. And we'll have it protected and locked down even from our own employees or the people that we look at. If they don't need to get to that data, then they shouldn't get to it. And I think that's another low-hanging fruit where companies can go and look at. They can look at the database and all the user IDs that have access on the database and say, on a regular basis, are these right? Do they still need it? Are these people still here with the company anymore? They're not. All right, let's get them out. That's good hygiene to make sure that you have the appropriate access coming in to access data.
Mm-hmm. It's detective work. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's called detect. It's detective work. I think a lot of our listeners are going to be from different police agencies, right? This is detective work. You're looking for clues. You're looking for things that look out of place. That is detective work 101, right? So we're using different assets, whether it be the network or physical badge readers on doors or your actual personnel behavior changes, right? You're looking for things that are out of place. If a particular officer in an agency or some sort of coworker is typically working 9 to 5, but all of a sudden you see them logging in at 2 a.m. and they typically look at 2 gigabytes of data a day, or maybe they download 2 gigabytes of data a day, but now they're downloading 100 gigabytes of data a day. Like, that's something that you should be looking into. That's an anomaly, everybody. That is something that is different. Now, Jeremy touched on whether it's a personnel, like someone at your agency that maybe is disgruntled or what have you. They got passed up for a raise or a promotion. Some cases, which is terrible, but in some cases, there's a bit of blackmail going on. We've seen cases where hacking groups or even countries themselves will reach out to an employee and basically bribe them or blackmail them into doing some nefarious things for you. So that's one piece of it on the personnel side. The other thing that you want to look into, and Jeremy, I'm curious, you know, I'll kind of set it up for you. I'll tee it up for you, is you have that side of it, but you also have that the employee might be compromised. So it's actually not necessarily like, say, you know, I'm the person and you see all these weird logins from me, from Larry. It might actually not be me. Jeremy, what are your thoughts on that? Like, there's the other side of it, that maybe I am compromised.
And that's a good point too, because that is a way a hacker, we'll call them, one of the things they do is once they get in, they take over an account, a trusted account. They target like an admin, but they could target like a regular user that should have access. And, you know, we've got to be able to look at, that's why we have to know the behaviors and the user access rights. So it could go back to like that person connected, but they're connecting at weird hours at the time, and they're downloading a lot of information. But what if their computer that they're on, what if you see that they're connecting to some website or some IP address that you've never seen before, and you see data moving off their computer somewhere else? Our detective devices that we have, whether they're, you know, local to the computer or whether they are part of our network, should be able to pick that up. So if your computer, Larry, that you were on every day and you're coming in now at 4 a.m. and your computer is now connected to some country in Asia or some other side of the world, and it shouldn't be, mm-hmm. that's something that's an indicator of compromise. Like your account, you're trusted to be in there, but your computer is doing it at weird times and it's connecting to sites and websites and other locations that it shouldn't be. So it's got to try and move the data out somehow. It's got to get it off your computer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So let's move on to the next section. But just to review, it's important that you're getting these logs, these anomalies off of your different assets that Jeremy explained. You have to understand all of your assets. And then you want to turn on logging with these systems so you can get the logs and start looking at anomalies that are happening with these particular assets. So the next section under detect is called adverse event analysis. And I'll describe this one and I'll tee it up for Jeremy again. Anomalies, indicators of compromise, and other potentially adverse events are analyzed to characterize the events and detect cybersecurity incidents. It's kind of the big piece of it. That end of it is these events, which these logs that you're recording, are analyzed to basically highlight incidents. Overall thoughts around that one, Jeremy?
Yeah, and again, I think we talked about these assets. They're the most important to us, these portions and parts of our network that we need to focus on and protect, and then the log files and things we need to look at. And we need to also prioritize and look at what are expected behaviors, because a part of adverse event analysis is finding things outside of the norm. What is an adverse event is something that should not happen, and we need to find those things. So an adverse event could be, you know, as I mentioned before, someone connecting like 10 times in a row to their account. That normally doesn't happen. That's not an activity that I'm going to expect. But let's say that I see it, they're trying to connect 10 times in a row and they finally get in. Is that an adverse event? Or is that really Larry getting into his computer finally because he remembered his password? A smart person monitoring the network would set a threshold and would set up kind of a use case to say, if I see this happening, 10 times is too much for me. That's adverse. I'm going to go and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it happen. We're going to go and pay more attention now to it. But again, you got to understand your networks. A lot of companies will go and buy network devices like intrusion prevention systems, and they'll let them run for a couple weeks at a time just to record and analyze network traffic and analyze patterns. And that's, I think, what people need to know and understand. They need to know, where does my database connect? What are the backend servers? Where does data flow when it comes in? Where does it go to backup tape or into a backup environment? When does change management occur? When do changes normally occur? Mm. Everything should be planned and done in an organized, orderly fashion. Events that fall outside of that, we can now say can be adverse.
That's great. So there are a lot of subcategories under this one. And everybody stay tuned, because I'm already starting to think of some technology that you should all be using and some process you should be putting in place. Jeremy will have, me and him will have that at the end of this. So kind of under this, it talks about a lot of what Jeremy was saying, kind of the subcategories, right? Potential adverse events are analyzed. I want to focus on two of these, Jeremy, because I don't want to go over all of them, but I do want to focus on two of them. The second one, information is correlated from multiple sources. That's interesting. Can you think of an example on why you would want to pull multiple sources together to correlate and kind of alert you on some things?
I think a lot of it could do with, why is my computer going somewhere on the internet that it shouldn't be? There will be different sources of information. You could have a local software on your computer, an agent that is tracking for malware, right? You also got your firewall and your intrusion prevention system. And you could see what's kind of like happening with that computer. I see it going somewhere and I see it pulling data from a source. And then I see it going back out to the internet. I'm going to go look at my firewall, my intrusion prevention system. I'm going to go look at the local system and what it's doing. And I now have three different points of information that tell me and lead me to believe an adverse event has now occurred. I've got three data sources verifying that something is wrong. And a lot of these systems, with the great part about it, they work together now. They feed the data together. And if you set up your logging systems correctly, they will create that alert for you and say that the likelihood now of this occurring is high. This does look like an adverse event. Let's take action. There's nothing worse than a false positive or an event that's not really an issue. It happened, and you know, it was really a person trying to log in a bunch of times with their password. But someone had to spend the time and chase it. So I think having multiple sources of truth will give you a higher rate of reliability that something is occurring.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell, audience, that Jeremy also has some ideas from some technologies he's going to tell you at the end. He's already starting to tease it. All right. So there are some other ones, right? You want to kind of estimate the impact and scope of this particular event. That's really important. And we touched on that like earlier in another episode where we were talking about risk and how to identify risk and kind of quantify risk. This is very similar to that, where it talks about what's the impact of this, these events that are happening, like what does it really mean and what could possibly happen? It talks about the tools people are using, getting some kind of threat intel as well. But the last one I want to touch on, Jeremy, is at the very end of this. It talks about incidents are declared when an adverse event meets the defined incident criteria. Because, and Jeremy, I'll let you chime in on this. Everybody who's listening, who works for an agency, a company, a jail, a fire department, EMS, every single one of us has incidents all day long. All day long, everybody. Like, your firewalls are getting hit every single day. Your employees, your officers, your staff are getting hit with weird emails all day long, whether it's spam or it could be a phishing email, which is an email attack. So how do you know when to take action, right? You have to build a criteria to understand, all right, well, I've seen a 10,000 of these things happen on my firewall, but this 10,001 thing is something I should take action. So Jeremy, how would people just like go about figuring out, like coming up with this event criteria to take action?
A lot of people call it a use case, or they'll call it a story that they'll create. And they'll say, I know that these are good behaviors, or, you know, my firewall is dropping all these connections from China, or it's dropping things like SQL injection or other types of attacks that it knows. And those things are happening. But I want to know if it works, if it's successful, did it get in? I need to be alerted. Do I need to be alerted that all my systems are blocking emails that have malware attachments? Because the volume of it is so high now, because email is like one of the, is still the top target vector yes. to get malware into companies. I can't have somebody go and look at all of those. So I've got to set up kind of thresholds and indicators of a compromise so that I know what I need to take action on. And a lot of times, that's why we talked about having more than one source. So having more than one source, say we had a firewall issue, we had an endpoint issue where this person clicked on a button and a file was opened that's doing things that are not normal. And it's creating log files, and our intrusion prevention systems are seeing weird connections out to the internet. That to me would be more something to investigate than we received about 100 spam emails in 1 minute. 100 spam emails just came into us. Or 10 different countries were probing my firewall, but we dropped them all. That's great. We dropped them all, but that's what the firewall is supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. But the events that occurred that we need to go look at, we need to start to lay those out and set our top prioritized thing of when this happens, we've got to take action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I'd add to that is this part of it is probably not going to necessarily be solved by a technology. This is like you sitting down and coming up with plans. Like you need some written documents, some SOPs or what have you on these scenarios. If this scenario happens, we will take X, Y, and Z action. So yeah, that is a bit of planning that you, this isn't something you can just kind of turn on and forget about it. So definitely focus on that. All right. I said this is going to be a quick one. Let's kind of finish. We've been teasing it a few times, Jeremy, but let's talk about tactically, what are some technologies or some processes or even just some help that our listeners can get around this? And just to review, we're talking about detect, and that includes continuous monitoring and the adverse event analysis. So Jeremy, you can start. Let's say money's no object, right? So let's just like get rid of budget. All right. Let's just get rid of the budget issue. You've sat down, you're trying to tackle the detect area. What are some no-brainer technology or processes you need to put in place?
I kind of look at it as the pipeline, the data that's coming into my company. Is there a way I can run it in and scrub it? So there's companies out there like Arbor or Akamai. They start with all the different types of events that they know are bad in the world, and they'll scrub them for you. And that data and those connections to your website, to your location, et cetera, they'll see the anomalies. They'll see the geo traffic that shouldn't be coming to you, and they'll help block that. Then behind that, you'll have like a firewall, and your firewall will be blocking that as well. And you'll have your firewall rules set up. There are more advanced firewalls out there that do a good job of seeing like behaviors that are more application-based, where it's trying to like send a SQL injection or trying to talk to your web application. The traffic is in such a way that maybe a firewall be confused by it. So there's new generational of firewalls out there like FortiGates or F5s that have, they're called application firewalls, and they can read that stuff and understand that this is bad behaviors. Then you have your intrusion prevention systems that you can put in front of your firewalls, and you can also put them behind your firewall. So it's another sentinel that's standing in place and saying, this got past the pipeline scrubber. This got past the firewall, advanced firewall. And now I'm seeing it. Now I need to do something about it. And then you can have internal network monitoring happening as well. A lot of companies use tools like ExtraHop that have great intrusion prevention systems on it. Mm-hmm. But then finally, we have the local host. When we get to the server and to the person's desktop that are using it, we need endpoint software that also acts as a firewall that also is monitoring and looking at logs and behaviors. And we see there are some great endpoint detection software out there. Two of the big ones that I've looked at Microsoft Defender. Microsoft, I feel like, accidentally backed into that one. They got Defender going, and now their people are using it, and it's working really well. And we all have heard about CrowdStrike. And CrowdStrike, for the most part, works great. And it's one of the leading ones in the world. So think of that kind of layer approach of security that took us all the way down to the very end where the data is. We went through multiple layers of defense to protect and detect anomalous behaviors. So we have at least four or five different places where we could stop nefarious behaviors.
Love it. So we're doing an episode on detect. Our next episode is going to be respond. I think in some cases, there's going to be an overlap with some technology because there are some technologies that actually help both sides of these. So I do want to touch on one of the points that Jeremy made at the very beginning. I think it is important that you find a vendor who has access to like a lot of intelligence. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to go with the biggest and the most expensive vendor, but some of the ones that Jeremy mentioned, like the Akamai's of the world, that's a massive, massive company, and they see a lot of data. And I think it's important for you to partner with some vendor who sees a lot of data. You want a lot of intelligence. You want them to try to do a lot of the work for you. Like, they see a lot of threats, like the Microsofts, the AWSs, the Akamai's of the world. They see a lot of threats on a daily, even by minute basis. And they're going to be able to know for sure that this particular IP address or this particular behavior is a real threat and just like automatically like protect you against those. So I think it's important to kind of hop on Jeremy's point to look for companies like that. The other one I wanted to mention is I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, the listener, and I'm sure many of you are like, wow, a lot of those tools that Jeremy mentioned are great tools, but I don't have any staff to run those. I'm a team of one or a team of two. I can't do this. There is help. There are other avenues. One is you go with a managed security service provider, an MSSP or an MSP. Sometimes you hear managed security provider. And they can do a lot of this work for you. So I would be talking to companies like that. I would be even talking to your own. Many of you probably have like an IT consultant at the very least that maybe you can talk to, and maybe they offer some of these services as well. Where I do think it bleeds over between detect and respond, which we'll be talking about in the next episode, which is the respond side. There are some tools called manage detection and response. Pretty interesting how I said that, right? The detection and response. But there are some companies that can do that. Jeremy mentioned some of the big ones that are getting into this space. Microsoft is definitely there. CrowdStrike is there. It is SentinelOne. There's kind of a lot of them. And I'm sure the audience has probably heard of at least one of these. But not only will they detect these threats, but then they can respond to it for you. Like, they either have automated services through technology, or they actually have people that will even hands on keyboard respond to some of these threats for you. So for those people that are in the audience that are thinking like, oh, geez, it all sounds great. It's kind of a little complicated. I don't know where to begin. I don't have the help. There are services that can help you in this space as well. All right, Jeremy, that covers detect. Do you have any final thoughts before we end it? And you don't need to, but if you do, I'm going to give you the floor.
Yeah, my final thought again is dream big, but start small. And start small in taking the steps to know where your assets are. What are the most important parts of your network that you want to be detecting? And it goes all the way back to what's the data I'm trying to protect? What's the most important stuff to me? Kind of start there at the center and work your way out. Be very data-centric and asset-centric on what it is you're trying to detect, because our networks are big. We can't just go and spend all the money in the world, and we have limited budgets, and we have to use that money wisely. And by prioritizing and finding what's most important to us, that's the first step to doing it. And we can build a plan around that.
Dream big, start small. I like that. Don't try to boil the ocean. That's what this NIST framework is there for, everybody. It's going to take you on a journey. Do not try to boil the ocean. my last point, and I could probably say it in every one of these episodes, is lean on your partners and lean on your vendors to help you if you need some help. All right. Talk to them. How can they help you with these areas? You have all these great tools that you purchased. You're probably only using about 50% of the capabilities of them. So talk to your vendors, talk to your partners. How can you get more out of the technologies that you have? And then look at other technologies. All right, this finishes our Detect episode. The next one, so stay tuned, is going to be on Respond. That is something you can look forward to, and it will be a bit of a dovetail off of this last one. All right, everybody, so hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and until next time, we will talk soon.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.